In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR positive HER2 negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
But all right, y'all. Across the USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer Cali. So if you're keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment. Broadcasting live from the world-famous Coin Academy, it's another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, and I am Big Steel with my guy.
Yeah.
And of course, man, we have journalist extraordinaire Mr. Soren Baker in his house.
Yes, yes. Thanks for having me, y'all.
Oh, for sure, man. You know, we touching down, man, on this top 50 gangster rap albums of all time, man. It's been a journey, and I won't say it's been too much controversy with it, man. You know, anything, you know, first of all, these are just our opinions. Y'all free to go out there and create any kind of list that y'all want to. But I think that we are the experts up here. I do think we know a little bit of some of what we were talking about.
We the experts? Well, hey, I'm going to say we have a high opinion. You get me? You want to be labeled the expert?
Well, I think I got an idea. You know, motherfuckers have actually paid me for my opinion on certain shit. You know what I mean? I think I would know a little something. You know, how many records you don't sold? You don't sold like 14, 15 million records?
I've sold a few.
I think that would make you and Soarin' on Rope for everybody from the LA Times to the Source and all this other shit. So I would say we definitely know a little bit more than the average bear.
More than a little bit.
You know, a little bit more, man. I want to hop right into it, man. When we talk about the top five gangster rap albums of all time, we talk about like albums like, you know, The Chronic, Can't Forget That, Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted,
Death Certificate,
albums like that, man. I think with some of the craziest production around, the Boogeymen just went insane on that. DJ Bobcat, DJ Pooh.
Yep.
Rashad. Yep. It was just real, just nasty.
Thick, beefy bass line. Sir James did a lot on that album.
Mm-hmm. He did a lot. It was just a very well-produced album, I think, that was kind of ahead of his time because it kind of took that. You remember back then how everybody was meshing the samples together?
Yeah.
But they had started kind of playing their own instrumentation during that time over it, whereas the Bomb Squad would just kind of sample the stuff as it was.
Well, that's one of the many things as rap production in the late 80s going into the early 90s. There was a lot of musicianship that people, I think, don't understand or appreciate because a lot of people, Dre in particular, as you know, on the early Ruthless records, they had a lot of drums that were live, a lot of bass guitar, standing guitar man, and guitar man Sims and all those type of dudes, man. They were playing live music, and that I think makes a big difference when
the sample era was, you know what it was, but a lot of dudes didn't want to touch that shit because they didn't want to give up that bread.
Yeah.
So
very expensive.
That's what made me and, you know, Slip and who, you know, whatever. That's why we wanted to start creating, I guess, basically what we would hear or just try to come up with our own melodies or whatever. And then we would bring, Willie Z in to play. Right. You know, because
Drive by Miss Daisy.
sampling was good, you know, especially if you know how to chop a lot of shit up, which a lot of good producers knew how to do back then. But a lot of records were sample heavy, man, back in that era.
So, in this time, too, a lot of people were doing their interpolations. Mm-hmm. So, explain how that worked financially. If you interpolated a record versus sampled it, what was the financial difference?
To me, in my opinion, I would just say in the way we did shit is we would try to hide the shit.
Right.
You get me? So the financial gain from it would be, you know, better because you wasn't giving up publishing and then you wasn't giving up, you know, whatever, or the whole song. Sometimes you would have to give up the whole fucking song if you sampled somebody's shit and it was recognizable. So, learning how to interpret this shit, you could do different tricks with it. You know, okay. Leave a note out here or there, add a note here, or add this or add that. So, you know, a lot of shit I replayed, was probably shit I heard, but then by the time I got to the keyboard and Willie Z, and we would just recreate the shit, you know. Wanted to have probably the same melody and shit, but
like the same feel, but a different.
Right, but I'm going to change up something so a motherfucker just can't be like, oh, that's my song. You get me?
You know, I think a thing that was really pivotal to that at the time, because before, if you remember, with sampling, wasn't nobody clearing shit for a long time in hip hop. But then Biz Markie got hit with that. When Biz Markie got hit with that album, what was it? What album?
It was I Need a Haircut.
Yeah, I Need a Haircut. And he got hit, man. And it was some man like,
I think it was Gilbert O'Sullivan, I believe.
Yeah, and it was something like $1 million at that time.
Yeah, they did a cease and desist. They had to pull the record. So I remember when I bought it, I was one of the only people in Maryland that had it because the album got yanked pretty quick. So that basically put a big problem into Biz Markie's career, and a lot of other people got De La Soul. Tribe Called Quest, I read multiple times over the years that Can I Kick It, they don't get any money off that because they didn't clear any of the samples. And Lou Reed, I guess it's the Walk on the Wild Side, I believe, but he basically owns Can I Kick It, so they don't get any money off that song.
You know, the one upside to it, though, is they get that touring revenue off of that.
That's for sure.
You know, because, you know, Tribe has been all around the world, you know.
Many times.
Performing that song, you know, so.
They even use it at the NFL, man. Shout out to Justin Tucker when the Ravens, when they go to commercial break, they play Can I Kick It a lot of times going to commercial. I've seen it at least 3 or 4 times over the last 2 or 3 years.
But that's the downside to it as artists get older, that tipping them not getting none of that money. You know, the Lou Reed's family is getting that money. And in some cases, you only taking a little tiny smidgen of a sample, and it's like,
shit, it don't matter.
I want the whole record.
Yeah. And Steely Dan was the same thing for Me, Myself, and I. I don't remember reading the financial breakdown of that, but that's really what hurt a lot of De La Soul's early momentum because of that. But yeah, man. And when you... What's that?
Peter Guns.
Yeah, they sampled Steely Dan, and they did the same thing.
That is one of the reasons why we tried to stay away from just outright sampling shit, because you could probably get the label to pay for it, which is going to come out of your budget in the
long run. I was
going to
say, it's your budget, your money.
But knowing that you would get no publishing, you probably have to pay some upfront money. I mean, because we were a part of that. I mean, I sampled some Barry White. You know, we sampled some Isaac Hayes.
I was gonna say, you had a lot of big artists.
They paid like a motherfucker. But you know, I think what was good about our shit at the time was it was away from what everybody else was typically using at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of got like that, oh, okay, you want to use our shit? Okay, no problem. Oh, you know, because a lot of people wasn't using, you know, Barry White and other shits we was coming from. You know, that was records I used to listen to growing up.
Yeah, and so Barry is pretty fair with clearing the samples.
Yeah, so
Barry didn't go crazy.
I used, I think, a Barry White on fucking the Music to Drive By album, or Straight Checking Them, one of them. And then we used the Walk On By Isaac Hayes on Nigga Struggling and shit, you know. So, I mean, that's what you did. I mean, back then, you know. You found a funky motherfucking record, and you go ahead and try to chop it up. But you know the consequences of it. So it all depends on how much you desperately feel like that song is worth giving up, you know what I'm saying, all your publishing and giving up a couple of dollars up front and maybe all on the back end. Who knows? But
well, I also know, too, some artists had it that if a producer was going to sample, the producer was responsible for
they started doing that. Well, if you produce the record, it's going to come out of your end and your publishing and whatever. So that wouldn't affect, like, me as a writer or the artist, because I'm not the one who produced the beat. So why should I get my cut taken out of or money drawn from me? You got to pay for that.
Right.
Especially if you're using an outside producer outside of the camp. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I remember when I was working for Minder Music, we were actually involved in suing Dr. Dre
for the Let's Get High record because he had used the bass line from the Fatback Band. The dun 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 dun. And what was crazy about it is John Fogerty, that was the guy that owned Minder Music. Shout out to Big John out of the UK. But he contacted Dre numerous times. He wanted to clear the record.
Oh, wow.
Like, we wanted to clear the record. He just wouldn't respond. When we went to court with Dre, you know what Dre did? Dre came in, went to sleep, and walked out and left. Like, he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't give a fuck. Walked out and left.
What y'all want, Nick? What y'all want, man?
And I think that sample wound up costing him $1.2 million.
Man, they get that nigga that shit, man. Wow. Get up out of here.
$1.2 million, and they own, like, the publishing for the song. But they wanted to share it with him. They were willing to do that, but he just wouldn't get back to him.
Yeah, because at that time, you know, I was like, nigga, please, nigga, I'm making y'all hot as fuck again.
Right.
You feel me? Mm-hmm. That was probably my nigga Dre's motherfucking mind state. Like, nigga, ain't nobody in 93 bumping Fatback Band. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Was you bumping it?
No, I sure was.
I did when the 2001 album came out.
Crazy as fuck.
You know, when the 2001 album came out.
Nigga still said, nah.
Nice. I want to go back to
no sir.
I want to go back to I know you talk about death certificate somewhere, right?
Yes.
I want to go for that.
That's my number one.
In your mind, what makes that the number one gangster rap album of all time?
I think because it really examines so many angles of what was going on in society at the time, and Cube had so many brilliant stories that, you know, from the beginning of the album to the end of the album, it really examined, you know, Alive on Arrival was going after the healthcare system. You had Us, which was looking in the mirror at the self-created problems. You had Colorblind dealing with the problems of gangbanging. You had Steady Mob, which was just a day in the hood. You had My Summer Vacation, which I think is one of the best songs ever made about the migration of gangs and drugs. You had, I mean, it was just back to back, Wanna Kill Sam, talking about the government. It was
Horny Little Devil. Yeah, all kinds of shit.
My Summer Vacation.
Yeah. No,
which really examined the migration of the West Coast, you know, the West Coast gangsters into the Midwest, and it actually spawned me being originally from the Midwest. As I remember, Crips and Bloods coming to Ohio, and it wasn't no hostile takeover stuff. Like, it was just they had the best prices. They had prices cats couldn't believe, and so cats, they came up there with the work. So you had cats, you saw local gangs like the Brick City Outlaws and the Dynamite Devils that had been around since the 60s started kind of making the transition and turning to Blood Gangs, turning into Crip Gangs, just because they met somebody that was cool from California. And a lot of those cats set up shop in the Midwest is still there to this day. They wound up having families, wound up just never going back.
Yeah.
If they didn't go to the feds.
Yeah, that was the intention, shit. Get up out of Cali, go somewhere, set up. Once you plant the roots, you like, fuck it. Nigga, this is home.
Yeah, because they had, you know, Cube does a great job on My Summer Vacation of really breaking down that reality and how the gang culture spread in a different way. And like you guys are saying, the different drugs and the different way that it was distributed. It was just, My Summer Vacation is just an amazing, amazing breakdown. And then, of course, there's a very heavy Nation of Islam influence on there, and he's talking about, you know, knowledge itself and historical facts and different things going on, that all of that added together, plus the production, plus Cube being such a brilliant writer, it just really has everything. And I think Cube, Bobcat, and Rashad as the boogeyman, and then Sir Jinx, all super underrated producers, and all of it coming together all at once, and Cube having a few guest appearances mainly on Colorblind. It was highlight.
Record was cracking.
It's incredible. It's phenomenal.
I think, you know, from the transition of coming off as the solo artist from the first, from the America's,
Most Wanted.
This record was more West Coast feel.
Much more.
America's Most Wanted was, you know, it had. It had a few West Coast references and feel. You know, we had Once Upon a Time in the Projects. Yeah. And, you know, but I think with the death certificate, it really hit home on what you say, niggas, you know, West Coast rap and transition of what it was about. And
like absolutely. Said,
the songs just, you went through a motherfucking roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
And like you said, a lot of that around that time, you know, with being in the rap game and having to deal with the oppression of motherfuckers didn't want rap and, you know, they was hating on it. You kind of, even though niggas was on some gang shit, you kind of was able to listen to those songs on that record. Because you was like, yeah, they don't want a nigga to eat. And they tripping because we saying we from here and niggas is wearing colors and, you know, bitching whole shit. And, you know, just a reality of what niggas was going through on the daily. But for some reason in that time, man, they really was against what we was pushing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what that record represented to me, you know. Especially the cover with the Sam toe tag.
And that was like crazy, that. Too.
That was cracking.
Crazy.
That was like one of those classic covers, like Music to Drive By and shit.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, one of them classic covers that you always remember. Like, damn, them niggas did that. Like, damn, he did that. Damn, that nigga put a toe tag on Uncle Sam. Like,
I'm going to tell you one thing that he did, too, even the sequence and the way the album was sequenced, because if you notice...
The life side and the death side?
Yeah, he had given up the Nappy Dugout that talked about a promiscuous girl, and then he had Look Who's Burning.
STDs.
Right, you know, right after that, and I think that's something that was seldom talked about in hip-hop, is AIDS.
Yeah.
During that, you know, nobody talked about AIDS. Nobody talked about... venereal sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah, I think the difference is, though, with Cube, because if you remember Boogie Down Productions on the By All Means Necessary had a Jimmy song where they were talking about the J, the I, the M, hat. The M, yeah. The Jimmy hat. So people were talking about it, but the difference that Cube did and Cube always did is took it much more on a street profane level, whereas KRS-One was doing it more of a edutainment, whereas Cube was like street edutainment on a totally different level, much more graphic and explicit because people had been rapping about it, but when Cube did it in a way that I think resonated more with a lot of people, because as great as the Jimmy song is by Boogie Down Productions, a lot of people don't remember that song. Even though it's a safe sex song, and even though it's on a great album, it's on a gold album. That's a gold album.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the My Philosophy album. It's on the I'm Still Number One album. So it's on the Stop the Violence album. Illegal Business album. Yeah.
Slipping.
That's one of the best albums too ever
made.
That's
my shit, man. Right
but
there.
I think that's the, when you have Giving Up the Nappy Dugout, you have Horny Little Devil, these type of songs, when they're examining the sexual tension, racism, sexually transmitted diseases, but doing it from such a profound
hood nigga way. Like, niggas gone, like, you speaking on topics that usually motherfuckers would be like, man, what the fuck you talking about? Mm-hmm. But you putting it in a way to where niggas go, hell yeah.
Exactly.
I knew a nigga got burnt, and I knew a bitch who was giving
up. What's the matter, you burning?
Yeah. Nigga, so he put in a conscious shit in a way that the average motherfucker could relate to it.
Exactly.
And you had to simplify shit sometime for motherfuckers.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Did you know anybody during that time period that caught AIDS or anything?
No.
And you know, and that was the thing. And what was scary about that is that it was impacting the African-American community in disproportionate numbers.
Right.
Because nobody talked about it. Nobody talked about it. And I remember my cousin that caught, I had a cousin, rest in peace, Tiff, that caught AIDS, right? And she caught it from her husband. He was a hemophiliac and he caught it from Kaiser. And I just remember thinking like, wow, that really kind of fucked me up a little bit, because at that point, you would hear little rumors about certain people in the neighborhood.
Right.
They had the package, but it would never get confirmed. Like, so it was almost one of them things that nobody want to talk about.
Right.
Like, nobody ever talked about it because I ain't gonna lie, it had me scared to death.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. It scared you away from some ass.
Hell yeah, it made me definitely go.
but say, it definitely scared you away from some asses. It didn't. Like, nigga, I think twice. I think I'm gonna pass on that one right there. It's a little funky today. I think I'm gonna pass on it.
For sure, you definitely became more. You definitely.
You had to be more mindful.
Yeah, exactly. You had to be more smellful. You know what I'm saying? Shit. You got to be able to sniff out that shit.
Yeah, for sure. And I think...
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of
bit.
Us.
We're
a
figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been
juicy.
Podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
It was a phenomenal album, man. But I want to go, Soren, name your list. Name those five off again.
So Cube is number one. And then my other five.
Now, this is Soren's number one. This is Soren's.
Yeah, that's my number one, Death Certificate. And the other ones in the top five, I would say, is The Brothers for Life, N.W.A., The Chronic, Dr. Dre, Stroud, Compton, N.W.A., and Eazy-E, Eazy Does It.
My nigga Soren said The Brothers for Life.
Hey, man, you know, Soren
being politically correct.
He's slick with
you
that.
Know, some people, you
I'm
know.
Say, I'm saying for him. It's niggas for life. You feel me?
Thank you, Eight. Thank you.
Y'all good, man.
I want to talk about Niggas for Life for a minute, man, because
that's Dre's best produced album.
I think Dre was making that transition.
In my opinion.
I think everybody has something to prove. You got to remember, Q had just left the group. And everybody was kind of wondering what the
production was. Production was way better than Straight Outta Compton.
By far. It's Dre's best produced album to me.
Straight Outta Compton was on some real, like, you know, like a lot of niggas, especially DJs, and him coming from a DJ,
yeah,
he was a blender, man. A nigga knew how to blend records, scratch and all that. So a lot of the first Straight Outta Compton record was a lot of break beat.
Well, it's a very Bomb Squad-esque album.
Exactly.
Very Bomb Squad.
Tempo, really, you know, like, not too, like, as of today, if you listen to it, you would go, this ain't no West Coast record.
Not at all.
As far as production. Now, what they talking about
is
West Coast.
All day.
But the production, they mocking back east, you know, with the heavy motherfucking breakbeat-influenced tracks.
All day.
The Niggas for Life album was more, you know, bassline riffs and horns.
And back to playing the instruments.
And exactly. So it gave a more of a West Coast feel to N.W.A. record.
Not to take nothing away from Dre, but Dre has started doing a lot of work with the homies from Above the Law.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, Above the Law was very, very much in the live instrumentation at the time.
Absolutely.
They actually invented G-Funk around that time because you got to remember, Warren and Snoop were in Above the Law's camp at that time.
Yeah.
They kind of honed their skills over there, you know what I mean, before they got over to, before Snoop started messing with Dre.
Well, you know, I talk about this in my book, The History of Gangsta Rap, but if you really look at it, the Vocally Pimpin' EP that Above the Law put out in 91 and then Black Mafia Life, which came out in really in 92. I don't know how I got it in 92 in Maryland, but I did. I had it before the Chronic somehow, and I got it from a record store, so maybe it had shipped accidentally or something.
Right.
We had a lot of that back then.
But by the time the Chronic came out, I had heard a lot of the samples that they used on Vocally Pimpin' and Black Mafia Life were used on the Chronic in the exact same way. So Above the Law, they did it first and they created it, and I'd say Dre stamped it and perfected it, and Warren G really commercialized it. So
yeah, for sure. You know, I would say the biggest thing, man, on the Niggas for Life album, man, outside of Dre's production, it's all of them dudes was coming off on there, man.
I was gonna say MC Ren.
Ren was on there killing shit.
Woo.
Ren was destroying shit on there in that album, man. And I think he had a, I ain't gonna lie, man, I could picture all them dudes like, man, fuck this. I'm tired of motherfuckers talking about Q being a man all the time. I'm about to make my statement on this album.
I think Ren was always,
he was always there.
To the penmanship. Like you said, outside of Cube, I always thought that he stood his own ground.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When it came
let me ask you this, A. Being from here, growing up here, and being in Compton, because on Eazy Does It, it's really Eazy and Ren are on that album a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the Straight Outta Compton, it's Dre and Ren are on it a lot.
Yeah, they was back and forth, man.
They were doing the harmonizing.
The Compton and the Hot Compton.
Yeah.
The house was cracking, man.
Super cracking.
Yeah, they did a lot of again, that New York.
It did a lot of that back and forth, man.
Yeah, the Run DMC style.
Was cracking and shit.
So my question, Nate, is when being here, because even in Maryland, I always thought it was more of a equal share. Like, I always looked at Ren and Cube back then at this as like the same level dude.
Mm-hmm.
So was that the vibe out here that you guys were getting?
For me, I always put Ren in the, like, there was no first and second to me back then when they was getting off. Dre was who he was. I never looked at, you know, Dre as, because he was the producer doing the beats and all that.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew Easy was a hood nigga, so we knew he wasn't writing his raps and shit, but his delivery and his voice.
So cold.
But when it came to, you know, Ren and Cube, I never looked at, like, oh, Cube is here and Ren is, I always was like, oh, both of them niggas is fire.
Yeah.
Because
they were.
On Ren's solo record, on Ren, you know, when he would do those solo songs.
If it ain't rough, it ain't me.
Man, that nigga was
killing it.
So that was they was just both prolific to me at the time.
I actually thought Ren had a little bit more style than Cube.
A lot of people, you know, probably had Ren as the favorite also, because
he was mine. That's for sure.
Ren was hard.
He was just a hard nigga, man.
You know
what I mean? That's how we respected them nigga. He was from the hood, you know what I'm saying? And just to be putting out records and shit, yeah, Ren was like king to niggas, man. It wasn't no separation to us. Like, oh, you know, Cube and then Ren. It was never, especially when they was together.
Right.
Ren could hold his own with any motherfucker.
Hey, I'm going to tell y'all now, Bobcat got an album on Ren. It never came out. I had the craziest beats I ever heard in there. They got a song with Cube, Ren, and Dre that never came out, that Bobcat produced.
Wow.
Craziest motherfucking beat I ever heard, and all of them is on there coming off.
Well, I say, though.
And it just never came out, dog. They got some shit in the cut.
I'm sure.
Because Bobcat worked with Ren on Kiss My Black Ass and on Shock of the Hour, and he destroyed it. But they always seem to work well together. So I'd love to hear that one day, Steel. We gotta talk to Bobcat.
Man, I know you watch the show, Bob.
Please,
can't
Bobcat.
Get you to come up here, man. Bob, we gotta put them records out. He's supposed to be putting a lot of that stuff out this year.
Well, maybe
hear some shit, Bobcat.
Yeah, maybe
send
we
it
can
to me on the secret. Yeah. I won't let Steel play none of it. Just send it to me on the secret.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It'll just play it for us so we can hear it at least.
Hell yeah. You know, I know it's some, Soren, you didn't have it in your top five lists, but I'm going to bring it up right now. It's Doggy Style.
That's probably number six or seven.
Mm.
I don't know if Doggy Style, I think Doggy Style might be a number one, dog. And I'm going to tell you why. And it's conflicting to me. I almost wonder if we can have a tie in this. And I think that's what we're going to probably do. We're going to probably all make our own list and let the fans vote on it.
Okay.
You know, I think we probably should make our own top 50. And, you know, we dropped those sometime this week online on the internet. So if you go to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, hit the Gangsta Chronicles podcast Instagram up, you'll be able to go in there and see all three of our top 50. And we will have the fans actually vote on which one they dig the most. I think that's the only fair thing. We close on a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I just think, see, Doggy Style wasn't just the introduction to Snoop Dogg, which is the biggest brand in hip-hop, probably the most famous motherfucker ever, the most famous motherfucking rapper ever, probably. But I just think, well, what you came with that, and I'm going to tell you, Rage set that whole motherfucking album off. Rage is probably one of the most vicious, fuck, just called female MCs, one of the most vicious MCs of all time. What you think, eh?
I think Doggy Style change the lane of which, you know, we were coming as far as West Coast music. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, you know, were focused on East Coast hip hop. Not that we wanted to mimic East Coast, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. A lot of our beats, like I said, break beats and and a lot of heavy, you know, whatever, chopping up samples and up tempo and, you know, I think when it came to Doggy Style, it just put us in a different element as far as West Coast concerned. The production, you know, what niggas was, you know, niggas rapping out getting high and it was on a different element.
It was a change to the guard, kind of like it was just it was a change to me, and that's why I say that album itself, not just for Snoop Dogg's appearances on there, but just for everybody from the way the Dog Pound came in from.
But I think too the main key to me that the Chronic and Doggy Style did that really changed it is on a commercial pop level.
Definitely.
They made the music slower and it also made it feel more inviting. If you listen to Fuck the Police, that's an angry record. Gangsta Gangster is an angry record.
Definitely.
Whereas Gin and Juice, that sounds fun.
It's an angry record. Like, niggas was mad.
They were mad.
Niggas was mad then because of what was going on.
One Time Gaffed Them Up is not a happy record.
No, we had angry records because at the time we wanted people to respect what we were doing in hip hop. But then we also wanted motherfuckers to know fuck what's going on over here.
Yeah.
I think Dog came in with the aspect of like, okay, you niggas know we banging. So now I'm going to take it to a different aspect. Yeah. I'm going to take it to where when we ain't shooting and killing each other, now I'm finna tell y'all what we do just on a good day.
Yeah, we smoke weed. We smoke weed.
We gin and juicing. Nigga, it wasn't all just like, put it like, it wasn't
it was fun.
It wasn't all murder was the case. You get me?
And two, this something that in retrospect, I noticed this when it happened, but I didn't understand it at the time, which is with Doggy Style in 93 and being going to like high school and college events, I noticed this was the first time I had ever seen at a white party or a lot of white people at a party where they would play the whole album. I'd never seen that with an NWA or Compton's Most, with nobody, not a Public Enemy, not named the most popular rappers ever, never until really the Chronic and Doggy Style. And I remember it started with the Chronic and then that really exploded and became even more pronounced with Doggy Style. Never saw it.
Hood feel good. Music,
yeah, because it wasn't intimidating.
Music, because even like you said with the Chronic,
Let Me Ride,
but even the start with Nothing But a G Thing,
yeah,
you would look at that title and before you hear the music, you would go Nothing But a G Thing. Your instinct is like, oh, these niggas finna be on some hood gangster shit, nigga. This ain't nothing but a G Thing. A gangster thing. But then when you hear the music and then
and the video
then, making popular a groove that has already been embedded in some motherfuckers.
Right.
You know, when motherfuckers heard that I want to do something freaky, that's like wait a minute. Right. I heard that shit before. My mama used to play that shit in the kitchen and shit.
And it's familiar.
Or my auntie used to bump that shit. Yeah. So it gave you the automatic, man, I feel good like a motherfucker.
And I'm going to tell you another cheat, 2-8, rolling down the street, smoking Endo, sipping on gin and juice, down the street, watching ladies go by watching you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's real familiar.
But then, like I said, they knew how to... Nigga, we're going to turn this into a feel-good. Yep. And then when you watch the visuals, it make you feel, oh, man, niggas is all out kicking it at the drive-in and passing drink around. It's like you said, it made a motherfucker put on the record and go, oh, I can listen to this.
Yeah. It sounded like they was having a party, dog. It was
sounded like they had a party.
And then Doggy Dog World continued that, too.
Let me, like you said, let me rap. Who gonna, like, let me rap? Yeah. How can you even, it don't matter what the color is.
Right.
Even if you are, like you said, all Caucasian white party with a gang of college kids getting drunk and motherfuckers bumping, let me
rap. I've never seen that before.
How can that be deniable? You know what I'm saying? It's undeniable for you to sit up and be like, I don't want to hear that.
And I was at college at Xavier in Cincinnati.
I don't want to hear that. Even
it was
with
Xavier,
nothing,
and they was banging it out. That's what they was banging.
They made the shit. They made the shit acceptable, even on the street tip. So that's why I think it turned the era of alienating a lot of West Coast artists to where, you know, yeah, you niggas don't do nothing but gang bang, shoot at each other, and say fuck the police. Now, oh no, nigga, we party, we feel good, we smoke a little weed, we ride around in our nice cars and our low riders, and it's a good day today. You feel me?
Yeah.
Like you said, from the Chronic, Snoop just, it was the same formula because look who you got behind the boards. You got Dre behind the boards, and like you said, Snoop led all of the Chronic, so it's just the same fucking formula. Let's just do a part two and call it Doggy Style, and now you gonna be the leader.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, you never get invited to none of those sessions?
Which ones?
For Doggy Style.
Oh, no. I was not a Death Row camp invite because they were cool with, Suge ran Death Row, and even though they were mixed in, Bloods and Crips, and they all got along, we were still Crips to Suge. You feel me? So we were Bompton's Most Wanted to Suge. That's what he used to call us.
And you know what's funny? You think Quick being over there at that time with them, because Quick was hanging around with them a lot.
Of course, that had a lot to do with it. I mean, you've heard stories about it. But that would be natural, of course. You know, Quick was hanging around with them. He was hanging out with them. I think Suge started managing them and all of that. That's how he was able to perform at the Source Awards on their showcase. You get me? Because Quick was signed to Profile. Yeah. He was non-existent with Death Row. But
then
once a lot
Suge
of shit came
Profile
in.
Profile had him on suspension or something at that time. They wouldn't let him put out these records.
So he got Suge involved, and Suge got to be in his manager. So, you know, no, I never got any Doggy Style invites.
Can you imagine how that would have sounded?
You know. I'm shit went the way it should have, and I think it is what it is.
Well, you was dropping your own fucking classics.
Yeah, I was. I had already.
Yeah, he
been,
was doing quite well for himself.
I had already been, I had been a part of a crew. You know, that was a crew. You know what I'm saying? Death Row was a crew. Ruthless was a crew.
Well, you had your own crew.
Lynch Mob was a crew. We was just us, man. That's it. We was just us.
All I remember hearing about Wondering was, man, I can't wait to hear Hawkenberg. You was putting
we was just us, man.
Niggas on the run.
We didn't have no big entity clique or nothing like that. It was a couple of niggas from the neighborhood, and that's how we did it. Man, 4 or 5 of us, and that was it, man. And so we never had the trickle down of the tree, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. From NWA
ten different groups coming up to
Dre, and then the tree. We didn't have that.
You would think, you being from Compton, man, Dre ain't never reached out or nothing.
No, Dre was cool. I talked to Dre. We've hung out a couple of times, but we've never got to the stage of, fuck it, let's do some music.
Because Dre's tempo, I'm a big tempo person. Dre's tempo of his music is like a groove. Like, even though it's up in the 90 BPMs, it sounds a little bit slower. It sounds like 85. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And I think, because that's 8's lane right there.
Yeah, that's my lane.
8 ride one of them type of tracks.
That would be perfect, actually.
That would have been fucking bananas. I know you mentioned Easy Does It, right?
Yes.
In the mix of all this. Now, I definitely, for what Eazy-E represents to gangster rap, I definitely say you almost have to put him in that top 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if sonically it matches up with those other.
I don't know, man. Eazy Does It. That album is.
I'm going to tell you my favorite song up there. This is the stick up. Nobody move, nobody care. This is the stick
nobody
up.
Nobody move.
Get face down.
Nobody move.
Nobody
track number
move.
2.
That was fucking crazy.
Dude, that's another one with MC Ren.
Mine's Still Talking Shit.
Yeah, Still Talking Shit.
The first track. Right there. That was a crazy way. And being in Maryland, I was like, Compton, I thought they were from LA. They said Compton, Michigan. I was like, what are they doing? Like, who are these dudes? But that whole album, the thing I like about it, it's, first of all, it's incredible, but you got MC Ren is on it a lot. Easy's on it a lot. But then Easy's character, he's got the humor. He's got the voice. He's got, you know, they got Michelle A, the girls talking like on radio and on We Want Easy. You know, they got all the stuff coming back and forth. Easier Said Than Done has one of my favorite line, my little sections of a rap ever. When he said, yo, I don't do dope, but I'm dope, not a dope, but I'm doper than anybody who tries to cope. And
you can tell Ren was writing that shit.
Dude, they told me Dre wrote that.
Dre wrote it?
That's what I was told by people there.
Man, I'm going to tell you something. What's Dre, the one with no slouch from the microphone.
What's the one with they act like he doing the interview.
No More Questions.
And that motherfucker was crazy.
Dude, he's breaking down a robbery. Come on, man. Hey, you know. And the song structure is so different. Like on No More Questions, he's doing the interview, and then he goes off and describes what the lady's asking him. He goes and talks about, like, oh, I'm doing a robbery. Oh.
All the lights were out. Stepped in the light. That nigga was.
That shit was cracking. Especially the way the breakdown and the beat switch.
And then
drop out in there. Cause the people leave. I got another trick up my sleeve. Step with Pep to the back of the house.
All the lights is out.
That shit was hard as a motherfucker. And they come in with a boom, boom, boom.
That's what I'm saying. Like that album, Boys in the Hood, is on there too, of course. Mm-hmm. The remix. But that album, I think it just showed. It was super street, super gangster, super hard, but Easy had such character and the humor, which I think anytime you're able to add some humor.
So I can always
have an on-hold skeezer. Come on, man. I was like, what? I was like, who is this?
He was motherfucking playing with him.
Yeah, and with the Yellow Man sample with the Nobody Move, Nobody Hurt. It was just. It brought in so much stuff coming right after.
Down, eyes wide, said, here's what I'm going to
put inside.
Grab it like a rabbit. That's what.
You know what, though? It was a lot of white folks playing that album, too, man.
That album was the shit, man. It was the shit.
And until the controversy with Fuck the Police, that album was actually, it went gold before Straight Outta Compton. It came out before Straight Outta Compton, and it was platinum before Straight Outta Compton. It was a very big album. I think just the controversy.
Well, it kind of set everything up.
Absolutely. JJ Fad set it up. Then Eazy-E set it up. And then NWA took it out the park.
That nigga was clever as a motherfucker.
Dude.
Like, I'm going to be in the group. And then I'm going to do my own solo. Fuck it. Let's get all this motherfucker.
And the cold thing about let's get all this motherfucking bread
right quick.
And let's not also forget that, obviously, I understood this better later, of course, but to especially people like us in Maryland or people just around, Eazy-E was, he had the uniform. He was what the gangster rapper was. He was the gangster
Wore that shit to the T.
He did.
With the hat on, the white tee with the gloves, nigga with the Lokes, nigga, the 501s, nigga.
Yeah, the Jerry Curl, the fro. Come on.
He was the epitome of what white people like, oh, yeah. That's the gangster.
That is
like,
the guy.
That's the gangster.
That's right the ahead. Guy.
And
absolutely.
You know how cats back in the day and still this day, you would see a G-cat, it'd be 90 degrees outside. They got a big-ass jacket on. They got some gloves.
Yep.
They got a beanie on and some Lokes.
Still.
And it'd be 90 degrees outside.
And so, for you know, yeah. Motherfuckers got to recognize that we've had a lot of MCs and groups and crews and artists come out of the West Coast, and you know niggas are on all kind of shit right now. You can represent your hood,
yeah.
Fucking, you can be. You just think about it with our expression of hip hop. No disrespect to the East Coast, but. With our expression of hip hop, you know, being able to say you know, fuck the police or what went on in the neighborhoods with drug selling and niggas pulling drive-bys and getting jacked and, you know, from expression of the dicky suits and the khaki suits and the bandanas and what we went through for look at hip hop today.
Right.
Motherfucker, you can be anything from a trap nigga to a gay rapper to you can be anything you fucking want today because we took all of that. Oh, hell no.
You can be who you want to be.
Oh, hell no. You can't do that.
Right.
You remember, nigga, back in the days, nigga, shit. You can't wear motherfucking tennis shoes in clubs and jeans and fucking t-shirts and shit.
With saggy jeans. Man, please.
That was a funny thing about it. You remember how they used to have them dress codes for them clubs in Hollywood?
Man, you better come in here. I used to call them with the motherfucking Sunday best. You got to come to the club with your Sunday best on. Are you okay? Nigga, I'm not trying to go to a club like I'm finna go to church.
What was crazy back then, if you wanted to go see a concert or something, you had to wear your slacks, your shoes to go in, but the cats up on stage had on some khakis.
Yeah,
They had on a t-shirt, a jacket on.
Nigga, I remember, nigga, back in the days, nigga, when they wouldn't even want the artists to wear hats in the club, nigga.
Right.
We used to get ready to go perform at little clubs, nigga, try to walk in, nigga, and they used to be like, oh, no, you got to go leave your hat in the car.
Yeah.
I used to be like, huh?
Well, in Maryland.
I used to go out of town to little small towns, and the motherfuckers used to be like, yeah, you got to leave your hat in the car.
Because people.
I'd be like, what?
Well, did they do that out here? But in Maryland.
They did it, like, when I went on the road.
No, but I'm saying because they would put razors in them.
Nigga, when I would go on the road, yep, you go to little clubs, you know, promo tour, little small clubs. Nigga, you walk up, nigga, with your motherfucking big jacket on, nigga, or your Pendleton, nigga, and we got a motherfucking L.A. hat on or a C on the cap or whatever, the motherfucking security be like, oh,
back
no,
to the
you
car.
You got to go leave that in the car.
It seems like security like, you
act like this motherfucker a pistol or something.
Or a bomb up there.
I'm about to shoot a nigga with my cap and shit when I get inside. Nigga, it's going to provoke a nigga like a motherfucker. But we had to go through that. You get me? We had to go through that because of the fear of motherfuckers not knowing what was going on at the time as far as hip-hop being new or not hip-hop, but us as far as West Coast artists because, you know, they had hip-hop. We had, like I said, Curtis Blow and the Fat Boys and, you know, we had East Coast and whatever, but when niggas started pulling up in motherfucking lowriders and khaki suits, you know what I'm saying, with four Ancient Mama bandanas around their head, motherfuckers be like, oh, you niggas rap? Like, you niggas do music? Oh, no, no, turn away. So, like I said, Easy was the epitome of the gangster to motherfuckers and shit. Because, you know, they used to get harassed going around the country and shit, too.
Yeah.
Let me ask both of y'all this. Is the Chronic 2001 as good as Doggy Style Order of Chronic?
Wait, say that again?
It's
2001 album?
Yeah, the 2001 album. Is that as good as either Doggy Style or the Chronic?
Not to me.
No.
Not to me.
Doggy Style, I think. And I like the Chronic. The Chronic is, but the Doggy Style is better than the Chronic. And I think Chronic 2001 is, would you put that before the original Chronic or after?
To me, it's after.
I think it's after. I think it's after, definitely. I don't think that's a top five album. I think it's definitely a great album, but I don't know if it's a top five album.
Yeah, man.
It's not to me. Man.
These nuts.
Yeah, the Chronic is so shit, much stuff. And, so,
yeah, definitely.
You know, shout out to the homie Warren G. He don't get enough credit as far as his input in that because a lot of those records, I used to see, you remember it was a record store in North Long Beach called the Velvet Underground?
Mm-hmm.
Off Atlantic Boulevard? Because I used to go up there looking for records, and I would see Warren up there always getting a gang of records. He would have like 100 records on the counter and searching for more. Now I know what the fuck he was doing.
And getting his samples together?
Yeah, because this was around that time. This was before all that stuff. So to be around during that time period was just special because I would see him up there And I always knew who Warren was, right? We didn't know each other personally, but he would be like, what's up, man? You know how Warren talk, what's up, man?
Right.
And he would have stacks of records on there, and I would be wondering, like, what the fuck is this dude doing with all these records?
Hmm.
And he brought a lot of those records to Dre, and a lot of those records on the Chronic were records that he was working on. Of course, Dre put his hands on them and made them tighter, because I know Mr. Grimm was on the original Little Ghetto Boy.
Hmm.
That was originally a Mr. Grimm record.
Okay.
And, of course, we all know what happened with that. You know, by the time Snoop and the Mr. Officer.
Yeah.
You know, to break him off something?
Mm-hmm.
That was originally Big Mike's record.
Yeah, Big Mike. Whew.
He was almost on. Ain't that crazy? Big Mike and 3-2 was almost on the Chronic, dog.
They were almost on Death Row. Because I think they were going to do a joint project.
Yeah, they
Big Mike had told me about that.
Yeah, they was going to do something with Jay Prince.
Yep.
And that's crazy, man. That's crazy, man. But I think when you look back at all these records, man, that's why I say, you know, we go have our own top 50 and stuff, man, but you got to seriously consider that doggy style, man, for just so many reasons. Because it's like 8 said, it changed the landscape of music, a gangster rap anyway.
So, 8, why do you think it's better than the Chronic? Doggy style.
I mean, shit, anytime you... I think just being able to... Just being able to just feed off of what was happening around, you know what I'm saying? If we was there with the Chronic, putting the Chronic together, now we see the formula. So now everything is going to be a step up. I just think, you know, with Dre having to, you know, with the success of the Chronic and seeing the success that Snoop was having for being on the Chronic, now, nigga, we can go in and really flip this. And I think that's what happened, you know. Anytime you get a chance, it's, you get those once in a blue moons, you get me?
Right, right.
And when you get the feed off the formula that's already working, I mean, because, shit, we was all here around the round table, right? We all in here putting together the Chronic. Rage is here, RBX is here, Daz is here, Corrupts is here.
Yeah.
You know, Warren is here, whoever. Nate, we all here. So now when it's time to do doggy style, shit.
And still, you think it's better?
We got more money.
Yeah.
We got more money. We got
more success.
Input, better success. We got better this, better. So it's just gonna make the shit. Oh, nigga, let me try this now.
Well,
so
one thing I do like about the Chronic better though is I love Dre rapping.
Oh, Dre is.
And that's why I think now that we're talking about all this stuff, that's what I think Doggy Style doesn't have as much of that the Chronic does. Is I think Dre is a great rapper and always has been.
You got to remember, Chronic was Dre's album, technically.
Well, I mean.
Well, the Chronic, well, yeah.
It is Dre's album.
It's Dre's album, but like I said.
I think that's Dre, why I like
Dre
it.
Dre just knew, you know the formula. Shit, I'm going to go with what I think is working. And yeah. He knew it was working since Deep Cover happened.
Yeah.
You get me?
And since, it was Snoop.
Since Deep Cover happened, he like, I know the formula. You get me? Like, I'm not one of them niggas who's selfish to, you know.
I got to be in the front.
Some motherfuckers are, but some people, when they see the bigger picture, it's what make the product better. Like, I'm not one of those self-centered motherfuckers who feel like I can be the only star.
Right.
Like, I want to be the entity. I want to be the motherfucker the umbrella niggas is under. You get me? So I don't give a fuck if I sell 1 million and he sell 10. It's still the success
It's our success.
Exactly.
It's our success.
I think that's where his vision allowed. You know, shit, yeah. I'm going to let you rap on half of the motherfucking Chronic, and then we're going to turn around and flip around and let you do a whole project by yourself.
He was trying to set Snoop up and all those other cats.
It was, yeah, definitely.
You gotta
throwing you the alley-oop. Nigga, I've never been the forefront rapper.
Right,
you get
right.
me? As far as production and the mixer and all of that, that's where I stick my foot in.
Well,
rapping, I'm doing just, you know...
Dre's hardest line was, man, when he said, because if a bitch try to diss me when I'm full of liquor, I'll smack the bitch up and shoot the nigga that's with her. That's the type of nigga that you listening to. Talk to you for a minute, then my dick send you. Dre was hard as a motherfucker, dog.
And that's why, now that we say it and I think about it, because I always didn't understand why people like Doggy Style better, but now I understand why, for me, it's the Chronic. It's because Dre rapping more on the Chronic, to me, makes it better. Because Snoop is all over the Chronic. Snoop is the... It's really a Snoop and Dre album, per se.
Yeah, they the best Batman and Robin team ever.
So,
but the Doggy Style...
But we lose Dre on Doggy Style. That's my concern.
Sonically, but it's a Snoop Dogg album. You ain't supposed to have Dre on there rapping on every motherfucking song.
But that's what I'm saying. Still, Snoop is on... He is really the Chronic, too. It's like a Dre and Snoop album. It's like the... Raekwon Only Built for Cuban Links. It's Raekwon, but Ghost is all over it. Whereas the Chronic has Snoop all over it. It's a similar type of thing, to me at least. But I just think Dre brings, his presence vocally brings a lot. And that's why I think Straight Outta Compton, 100 Miles and Running, Brothers for Life, all those records are so good because Dre's rapping on, not he's not all over them.
We go see what the people decide. What people out there decide.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this, though, man. I was in Ohio a lot at the time. I was going back to the crib a lot, and I was, you know, floating through Kentucky and all that.
Right.
Everybody around the country was playing Doggy Style, dog.
Well, like everywhere. I said, I've never seen so many white people listening to rap.
Everywhere, dog. It's never. Like that album took, if you think about it, dog, you know how many gangster rappers came with their poor man version of Doggy Style and the Chronic after that? You had all these, you had, and then y'all had a big impact, 2-8. I never saw so many Most Wanteds. Detroit's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
Miami's Most Wanted. All these other different places. Chicago's Most Wanted. It was like, that was like the season for the gangster rap. Every gangster came out. You had cats coming out of Flint. You know, speaking of which, and these ain't no top 10 albums, Detroit put out some pretty good gangster shit.
Yeah. I think really, once the floodgates opened, almost every major city did. Mm-hmm. That had a rap scene. Don't forget Flint with Dayton Family.
Yeah, the Dayton Family.
And DFC.
Mm-hmm. And the DFC. And you know what? And that's why I say, man, gangster rap, you got to remember that we was going into the 90s with hip-hop. I truly believe gangster rap saved hip-hop. I think it needed something cutting edge to for mainstream. Because if mainstream America wouldn't have caught on to it, it would have been dead. If it would have just stayed a thing that was just in our local hoods that we just consumed, it would have probably never got no bigger than that. But when you had, like, to me, Doggy Style came out, it was almost like, Snoop was almost like the jelly to peanut butter, dog. And it was just like, it was just the perfect marriage between him and Dre, dog. And the music and the way that album just came off. You got to think about it. The first voice you hear on Doggy Style is Rage.
Yeah.
And it's a shame she never came out with, like, her album the way it got done, man. It's like, I was really looking forward to hearing Rage, man.
Yeah, sure.
Me
it's
too.
Unfortunate. You know, sure, that's what happens sometime in the music biz. You get caught up with labels and deals, and you can't do shit about it.
I was, that's your homegirl, 8. We got to get her up here, man.
Yeah, we try to get her up here and see what's cracking.
Yeah, what you think happened with her album? She ain't ever tell you about it?
Mm-mm.
I bet you that's just something, because I was really anticipating her because...
I just said it. I mean, labels.
Yeah, it was the label.
You get caught up in label shit, so there's nothing else to it. So you got, it just, you get caught up in when labels get to falling, you know, who's ever the last left around, you know.
Because look at it. Think of it in reality. Death Row, as big as it was, put out very few albums. They did not release a lot of records.
Yeah, it was a lot of compilations and stuff. They had soundtracks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They didn't put out a lot of stuff, man. As far as my number one, though, man, and I think I don't say it numerous times, man, I think it's and I love Ice Cube's albums, man, but you got to think about it. At this point, man, Doggy Style is 20-something years, shit, 30 years old now?
Came out in 93, so it's 30.
When you listen to him now, man, I think you could put Doggy Style out today and it would still jam unchanged.
Absolutely.
and it was still Jam Unchanged, man. That was a great piece of work, man. Great piece of history. I've been going back and revisiting all these albums, and even just the album covers back then. I was talking to 8 about, like, with Music to Drive By, who thought of that album cover? Because that we just had real, everything was original back then. It was just so dope back then. You know what I mean? Like, when I saw their album cover, I was like, damn, man. Who the fuck thought of that shit right there, man? Just the thing. Even remember King T's album cover where he's walking down the street with the 12 gauge on the side?
That was crazy.
And you had the back part to where you didn't know what it was. Like, he was just walking down the street, just looking like a real loke. He had on his khaki suit and his hat. Remember niggas used to dress like that, eh?
Yeah.
And he had the 12 gauge on the side, like the pistol grip on the side. That was hard, man.
That was incredible.
We had some really genius stuff, man. So remember, if you're watching this on video, like the channel, share the video and all that good shit. But if you listen to the actual podcast, you know, I want to congratulate my boy MC8 right here. You too, Soren, you've been around for a little bit too now. Man, you know, Charlamagne sent me that message, man, that we, you know, had over 1 million downloads already this year on the podcast, man. So I want to take this time to thank the fans, because without y'all, we not shit.
For sure, definitely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man, it's a big accomplishment.
You know, we go keep rocking and rolling. You know, Charlamagne told me, man, that put us in the top 2% of podcasting, man.
That's big, man.
So we go keep kicking this shit to y'all as long as y'all will have us, man. Remember, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, whatever, what you like, what you don't like, and we holler at you.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, Aaron MC8 Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeart Media Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears. Real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We
have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.